Knowing argument was useless, he followed in a rare fit of silence. The bright afternoon sun brought no warmth to the bitterly cold day. There was usually wind at the fringe of the Rang Shada Mountains, but thankfully there was little this day, for a change. It hadn't snowed for several days, and they had been able to make better time in the clear weather. Still, with every breath she took, the air felt as if it were turning the inside of her nose to ice. She intercepted Prindon and Tossadin halfway down the slope. They brought themselves to a halt before her, leaning on their spears, breathing heavily, which was unusual for them as nothing seemed to tire them. But they were unaccustomed to the altitude. Their faces were pale and their handsome twin smiles long gone.
"Please, Mother Confessor," Prindon said,
pausing to catch his breath from the strenuous climb.
"You must not go to that place. The ancestor spirits of those people have abandoned them."
Kaelin untied a waterskin from her waist and pulled it from under her mantle, where her body's heat kept the water from freezing. She held it up to Prindon, urging him to take a drink before questioning him.
"What did you see? You didn't go into the city, did you? I told you not to go inside the walls."
Prindon handed the waterskin to his panting brother.
"No, we stay hidden as you told us. We do not go inside, but we do not need to."
He licked a drop of water from his lower lip.
"We see enough from outside."
She took back the waterskin when Tossadin finished and replaced the stopper.
"Did you see any people?"
Tossadin stole a quick glance over his shoulder, down the hill.
"We see many people."
Prindon wiped his nose on the back of his hand as he looked from his brother to her.
"Dead people. How many? Dead from what?"
Tossadin tugged loose the thong holding his fur mantle tight at his neck.
"Dead from fighting. Most are men with weapons, swords and spears and bows. There are more than I know the words to count. I have never seen that many men. In my whole life I have not seen that many men. There has been war here. War and killing of those defeated."
Kaelin stared at them for a moment as horror threatened to choke off her breath. She had hoped that somehow the people of Ebenicia had escaped, that they had fled.
A war. Had the Daharan forces done this after the war was ended? Or was it something else?
Her muscles at last unlocked and she started down the hill, the mantle billowing open, letting in the icy air. Her heart pounded with dread at what had befallen the people of Ebenicia.
"I must go down there to see what has happened. Please, Mother Confessor, do not go,"
Prindon called after her.
"It is bad to see."
The three men jumped to follow as she marched down the hill, the slope speeding her effort.
"I have seen dead people before."
They began encountering the sprawled corpses, apparently the sites of skirmishes, a good distance from the city walls. Snow had drifted against them, partially covering them. In one place, a hand reached up from the snow, as if the man below were drowning and reaching for air. Most had not been touched by animals or birds, there being an overabundance for scavengers. All were soldiers of the Galilean army, frozen in death where they had fallen, blood-soaked clothes frozen rock solid to them, ghastly wounds frozen open. At the south wall, where huge oak doors crisscrossed with iron strapping had stood, was a gaping hole through the stone, its edges melted and burned black. Kaelin stood staring at rock melted like wax from a candle that had guttered. She knew of only one power that could do that. Wizard's fire. Her mind fought to understand what she was seeing. She knew what the results of wizard's fire looked like, but there were no more wizards. Except Zed and, she guessed, Richard. But this would not have been Zed's deed. Outside the walls, off to either side, headless corpses were heaped in huge, frozen mounds. Heads stared out from less orderly piles of their own. Swords and shields and spears were discarded to separate heaps, looking like great, dead steel porcupines. This had been a mass execution, carried out at a number of stations at once to handle the numbers more efficiently. All were Galilean soldiers. As she stared in numb shock at the splayed limbs draped over their fellows under them, Kaelin spoke softly to the three men behind her.
"The word you did not know to use to count this many is thousand. There are perhaps 5,000 dead men here."
Gently, Prindon planted the butt end of his spear in the snow, giving it an uneasy twist.
I did not know there was a word needed to count this many men.
His fist twisted the spear again, and his voice lowered to a whisper.
This will be a bad place when the warm weather comes.
It is a bad place now,
his brother murmured to himself in his own tongue. Kaelin knew this was the least of the dead. She knew the tactics of defense for Ebenezia. The walls were not secure fortifications, the way they had been in times long ago. As the city had grown in the prosperity of the Midlands Alliance, the older, stronger, fortified walls had been torn down, and the stone used to build these newer, more encompassing outer walls. But they had been built less secure than in the past. They were more a symbol of the size and pride of the crown city than a strong, defensible perimeter. Under attack, the gates would have been closed, with the toughest, most experienced troops on the outside to stop the attackers before they had a chance to reach the walls. The real defense for Ebenezia was the surrounding mountains, whose narrow passes prevented a broad attack. Under Darkenrol's order, the Haran forces had laid siege to Ebenezia for 2 months, but the defenders outside the walls were able to hold them back in the surrounding passes, pin them down, and harry them relentlessly until the attackers finally withdrew, licking their wounds in search of easier prey. Though the Ebenezians had prevailed, it had been at a great cost of lives to the defenders. Had Darkenrol been less concerned with finding the boxes, he could have sent greater numbers and maybe overrun the defenders in the passes. But he didn't. This time, someone had. These headless men were a part of that outer defensive ring. Backs to the wall, they had been defeated and captured, and then executed before the walls were breached, apparently as a demonstration to those still inside, to terrorize them, to panic them into an ineffectual defense. She knew that what was inside the walls would be worse. The dead women they had been finding told her that much. Out of habit, and without even realizing it, she had put on the calm face that showed nothing, the face of a confessor, as her mother had taught her.
Prindon, Tossadin, I want you two to go around the outside of the walls. I want to know what else is on the outside. I want to know everything about what has happened here. I want to know when this was done, where the attackers came from, and where they went when they were finished. Chandelin and I will go inside. Meet us back here when you are finished.
The brothers went quickly at her direction, their heads close together as they whispered to one another while pointing, analyzing tracks and signs they understood with hardly more than a glance. Chandelin walked silently at her side, his bow, with an arrow knocked and tensioned to the string, at the ready, as she stepped over rubble and moved on through the yawning hole. None of the three men had objected to her instructions. They were, she knew, astonished at the size of the city, but more than that, they were overwhelmed at the enormity of what had happened here. They respected her obligation to the dead. Chandelin's eyes ignored the bodies that lay everywhere and watched instead the shaded openings and alleyways among the small daub and wattle houses that were homes to the farmers and sheepherders who worked the land closer to the city. There were no fresh prints in the snow. Nothing alive had been here recently. Kaelin chose the proper streets, and Chandelin stayed close at her right shoulder, half a step behind. She didn't stop to inspect the dead laying everywhere. All looked to have died the same way, killed in a fierce battle.
These people were defeated by great numbers, Chandelin said in a quiet tone. Many thousands, as you called it. They had no chance to win.
Why do you say that?
They are bunched together between the buildings. This is a bad place to have to fight, but in a closed-in place like this, that is the only way. That is the way I would try to defend against a larger number, by blocking the enemy from spreading out behind me to trap me. Greater numbers would not be as much good in the small passageways. I would try to keep the enemy from spreading out and come at them from all sides so they could not attack as they wished, but must be always in fear of where I would be next. You must not meet the enemy as they wish you to, especially when they greatly outnumber you. There are old men and boys among the soldiers. Boys and old men would not come to fight beside Chandelin unless they saw it was a war to the death and I was greatly outnumbered. For these men to stand and fight against vastly greater numbers, they must have been brave. Old men and boys would not have come to help such brave men if the enemy were not so great.
She knew Chandelin was right. Everyone had seen or heard the executions outside the walls. They knew defeat was death. The bodies were felled like reeds before a great wind. As they ascended the rise to where the old city walls had stood, the dead were more numerous. It looked that they had fallen back, trying to make a stand overrun. All the dead were defenders. None were the corpses of attackers. Kalin knew that some believed leaving the dead where they fell in defeating an enemy augured ill luck in future battles, and further, that it abandoned their spirits to retribution by the spirits of those defeated. Likewise, they believed that if they left their dead at the site of a defeat, the spirits of their fallen comrades would live on to plague their enemies. Whoever had done this must have believed such, and dragged their own dead away from the bodies of those they had vanquished. Kalin knew of several peoples who believed that the act of dying in battle could bring about such thaumaturgy. One nation, above all, sat at the head of her roster. As they skirted an overturned wagon, its load of firewood spilled in a heap, Shondalin paused beneath a small wooden sign carved with a leafy plant next to a mortar and pestle. With a hand, he shielded his eyes from the sunlight and looked into the long, narrow shop set back a few feet from the buildings to each side.
What is this place?
Kalin walked past him, through the splintered doorframe.
It's an herb shop.
The counter was covered with broken glass jars and dried herbs, all scattered together in a useless mess. Only two glass lids remained unbroken among the pale green debris.
This is where people went to get herbs and remedies.
Behind the counter, the wall cabinet, which reached from floor to ceiling and almost the entire length of the narrow shop, had held hundreds of small wooden drawers, their patina darkened by the countless touches of fingers.